Hey there, and welcome back to the Mini Weekend. I'm your host, Jack. Let's get into it, Mini. First of all, welcome back to Thursday's Mini. And secondly, soda of the night, we're coming at you guys with another Olipop flavor tonight, Orange Squeeze. First thoughts, I like it. So for those that were listening just, I believe it was 2 weeks ago, the 27th, we tried our second flavor of Olipop was, I just had it pulled up here, the strawberry, what was it called? Strawberry vanilla. And I was a little caught off guard because I thought it was going to taste like something and wasn't just kind of going into it with a fresh mindset. So that's a little bit why I rated it so low. So this time around, kind of went into the Orange Squeeze with a little bit more of an open mind, and I'm glad I did. Wasn't sure if it was going to be like a vitamin C drink. Wasn't sure if it was going to be like a orange smoothly, like the strawberry vanilla. Wasn't sure if it was going to be, really anything, but I like it. It kind of tastes a little bit like a vitamin C kind of a drink to me. Smooth, refreshing, something you would sip on like in the spring, in the summer. Super easy. Really do like it. Once again, Olipop combines the classic soda that you know and love with prebiotics, plant fiber, and botanicals to support your microbiome and digestive health. And finally, a refreshing soda that's actually good for you. For the Orange Squeeze, though, on their cans, it says, our Orange Squeeze is reinvents orange soda with a citrusy vitamin C rich blend of natural ingredients such as clementines and mandarin juices collide with a hint of lemon to produce a bright twist of the nostalgic classic. And I gotta say, okay, there it is. Now that I read it, I can get a little bit of that lemon hint on the back end of that the back end of that aftertaste. And yeah, like I said, I mean, I obviously don't want to bore you guys. I really do like this one. I would recommend it if you guys like, it's almost like, it's like a lighter version of Fanta with like more orange or like vitamin C taste. I really like it. It's not a 9.2 like the root beer is, but it's not quite a 4.5 like the strawberry vanilla was. Give me a minute. Before we go on to rate this, did a little research. So Olipop has currently 15 different 15 different flavors. So we are a fifth of the way done trying out the flavors of Olipop for you guys. But I really do like it. For those that want more information, once again, we've had a couple different Olipops, like I mentioned, a couple different poppies. They're good for you, they're good for your gut health, just like anything. If you drink numerous of these a day, I would say, from what I've been hearing from some of my family members that are even more into Olipop and poppies and have been drinking them for a lot longer than I have, they really don't recommend you drinking more than one or two of these a day, just because, again, they're good for your gut health. So, too many prebiotics, and botanicals, plant fibers and stuff like that aren't going to be great for your digestive system and everything like that. So that's why the last couple weeks you guys have kind of heard me sipping on them and not trying to throw them back. Yeah, that's what we have. Like I said, go check them out, drinkolipop.com. They have a lot of different stuff you can read up on them and really understand what you're drinking. I know in today's day and age, a lot of people like to know what they're putting in their body, and rightfully so. Our bodies are our temples, and everybody wants to stay as healthy and as possible and lead the best life possible. So, with you guys, I'm sure some of you figured, well, he rated a 9, 2, and a 4, or 5. He's probably gonna try to find somewhere in the exact middle, and I'm really not. I'm really not. I don't want to plan it safe and do that. I like it. It's a little bit of a different taste for me. I normally wouldn't drink, like a couple years ago, I wouldn't drink something like this, but I do like it. I think this flavor, I will probably gravitate more towards in the spring and summer. Seven nine. Seven nine. On the scale of like it, love it, hate it, it's like it's on the higher middle between like it and loving. So yeah, love it. 7.9, and that is what we have for you guys tonight on Soda of the Night. Remember, drinkolipop.com, and you can find them on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Pinterest, and TikTok. For Tommy Town, we have a decent amount of stuff coming at you guys tonight. So the St. Thomas Tommy's, excuse me, men's hockey team was in action two times this last week. Once actually being earlier tonight. But the Tommies started the new year on a winning note with a 3-1 victory over the UMD Bulldogs in an exhibition game. The first 20 minutes of the game flew by with just only a couple of whistles in the period, as both teams were tied 0-0 despite 7 shots from the Bulldogs and 7 for the Tommies. And deadlocked without a goal, with just under 10 minutes left in the second period, both teams in the exhibition decided to change goaltenders. The Tommies pulled Aaron Trotter for Jake Seibel, and Duluth pulled their season-long starter Matt Thiessen for Zach Sandy, who had not played a game all season. And let me tell you, it only took 42 seconds for the Tommies to beat the new netminder as Liam Malmquist sent a rebounding Lucas Wallin shot through Sandy's five hole to put the purple in front. It was the only scoring play of the second period. And then fast forward to the third period, Ryan O'Neal scored with just over 5 minutes into the period after turning over the Bulldogs in the neutral zone. Had the game counted this, that would have been his fifth goal and 10th point in the last 9 games. But the Bulldogs cut the Tommy's celebration short with a goal just 13 seconds later to have the lead. And then the flurry of goals continued when Luke Manning sniped one through on the power play for the third goal in 2 minutes of play. And Manning's goal was the final score in the exhibition game. Trotter made 12 saves without allowing a goal, while Seibel surrendered just one goal in 18 shots he faced during the back half of the contest. So, it kind of surprised me a little bit that we were able to control the action for most of the game, but still a huge, huge, win. Exhibition or not, to kind of get things going, moving in the right way in early on here in 2024. But yeah, like I said, after that, we opened up CCHA play as we played Michigan Tech Huskies earlier tonight and got the 4-3 win. I think the most impressive thing about this for the Huskies, against the Huskies, the Tommies jumped out in just their second game of action in 2024, jumped out to a 3-0, excuse me, to a 3-0 lead with just under 3 minutes to play in the third period. However, the Huskies would score two quick goals in the second period to only be down by one goal going into the third period. And then the Tommies would manage to score on the power play. Excuse me, would score on the power play to go up 4-2, while the Huskies would manage one more goal on the night. For the Tommies, they got scoring from four different players. Mason Pullman, Tim Pachowski, Luke Leland, and Liam Malmquist all scored. Gleason, what is that? Gleason, Doctor, and Malmquist all finished with 2-point games, while Aaron Trotter made 32 saves in the win. So really awesome to see the Tommies get the first win in 2024, starting off on a good note, and they really hope to pick up the season sweep. What's that? Two nights from now against the Huskies, to really catapult them into this last half of the season to get ready for some postseason playoff play. So that's what we have for the men's team. For the women's team, they are still getting ready for their first weekend or their first game in 2024, and in over a month, as excuse me, as they will take on the Wisconsin Badgers. They will play on Saturday and Sunday, the 13th and 14th, in Madison. So the only thing to report on for them is actually just, what was it? Sorry. Just earlier this week on the 10th, so just yesterday, the women's hockey team is presenting a Tommy Buck drop. What does that mean? Well, it means for the first time in Division One, the Tommies will look to sell at St. Thomas Ice Arena for a game, as tickets are on sale for only $1. Yes, you heard that right. The St. Thomas team will host their first Tommy Buck game on Saturday, February 24th, as the Tommies host the Minnesota State Mavericks at 2 p.m. It'll be their final regular season game at home and senior day, where they will be highlighting the Tommy seniors and celebrating their accomplishments with a special pre-game ceremony. Like I said, tickets are on sale now, and fans can purchase tickets for just $1. Yeah, go ahead and go on to TommySports.com, purchase your tickets ahead of the February 24th game to secure your spot at the arena for the first women's hockey sellout of the D1 era. So super exciting for the women's team. And then as for the basketball teams, both the men and women were underway tonight. And both teams were actually in action twice this last week. So for the Tommy men's team, they swept the Summit League Big Sky matchup, winning their second of two games against Sacramento State, 63-50. Excuse me, as Bjorklund topped 1,000 career points on Saturday, scoring a team high 13 points. Really, they jumped out to a 14-point lead in the first period, that or first quarter, that just proved to be too much. Sacramento State scored 1 point more than the Tommies did in the second half, but just obviously wasn't enough in that. Unfortunately, their second time in action just earlier tonight, they hosted the South Dakota State Jackrabbits. They lost a heartbreaker in the final seconds, 80 to 81. St. Thomas actually trailed 30 to 39 at half and scored 50 points in the second half, but just wasn't enough. It was hectic going down the stretch. Excuse me, hectic going down the stretch here. Raheem. Oh, sorry, I was in the wrong half. So the last how the last couple minutes went. The Tommies hit a free throw with about 50 seconds to go to put them up three. At that point, to put them up three at that point, it was I was watching this on the app and it was crazy. So they were up three with 50 seconds to go. 50 seconds to go. Jackrabbits make a shot to make it only one a 1 point game for the Tommies. And then at that point, Anthony Raheem missed two free throws to ice the game, but unfortunately, after those, they were able to take a timeout, go down the court, and Zeke Mayo was able to hit the game winner with 6 seconds left. And in the final seconds, Anthony Raheem missed a 3-point jumper to win the game. So, tough loss, but at the same time, this team has been playing their butts off lately, and they're definitely come playoff time, they're definitely going to be a team to beat in the championship series. For the Tommies tonight, they were actually led by Anthony Raheem, of all people, who had a team high 21 points and finished with 4 rebounds and 3 assists. Drake Dobbs was right behind with 18 points. Kendall Blue added 17. And Brooks Allen with 11 points rounded out all the Tommies with double-digit points. Brooks Allen would also go on to lead the Tommies in rebounds with 5, while he would also lead the team in assists too. So had an effective game from the floor. And I think all in all, this, the Tommies, played a really, really good game. Weren't able to get key free throws down the stretch, which those will get you. Those will get you. But onward and upward, as they say. So the men's basketball team will be back in action, excuse me, as they will travel to Tulsa, Oklahoma to take on Oral Roberts at 7 p.m. on Saturday the 13th. And then the night of the next podcast, they will be in Vermilion, South Dakota to take on the Coyotes of South Dakota at 7 p.m. as well. So, and then very, very similar to the men's team, the women's team has been. The men and women's basketball teams have been kind of doing the exact same thing. So holding on now to a 5-10-7 record, 2-1 in conference play. Like I said, the teams are pretty much riding the same roller coaster. The women's team swept the two games, a part of the Big Sky Summit Challenge tournament thing, as they beat Portland State back on the 6th, winning 62 to 44. The Tommies took a 5-point lead into halftime and didn't effectively look back, as well as Amherst Gallia would lead the team with 16, the game high 16 points, and Jade Hill would finish with 5 assists. And then earlier tonight, the South Dakota Jackrabbits also got the best of the Tommies as they would beat them 55 to 75, as the Tommies were actually held to 20 points in the second half and only 8 in the final quarter. It is actually worth noting that the women's team against the Jackrabbits actually took a, what's that, 5-7 point lead into halftime. Jackrabbits just made the adjustments as they would score 27 in the third quarter and 20 in the fourth quarter to put the Tommies away. To put the Tommies away, despite 20 points from despite 20 points from Amber Scalia and Joe Langben. Excuse me. Joe Langben finishing with a double-double of 14 points and 10 rebounds. Jade Hill to go along with her 4 rebounds and 3 assists, finished with 10 points. So, just again, wasn't enough, but again, new year. Really at this point, not to, be disrespectful to the women's team, but didn't, all things considered, they didn't have a great season last year. They didn't, not having a great, sorry, not having a great season, record wise. They don't have to really do too much to improve on this year, as it's still early on in the season and everything. But last year the women's team finished 13 and 17 in their 30 game schedule. And the women's team is already 10 and 7. So what's that, in the last 13 games, the ladies need to win 4 games to take a jump and do better than they did last season. So I think that is very easily done for them, especially since they are battle tested once again. If you guys didn't, or if you guys did forget, they've already played teams like Drake Power Five teams like Butler, Iowa State, and even the Wisconsin Badgers. They didn't win any of those teams. But when you play big, prominent, Power Five teams like them, it gets you ready, and you get a glimpse of, okay, what's it gonna take to get to the next level, and produce at a higher level as well. So, yeah, and then, like we've talked about before, with the basketball teams essentially playing opposite schedules here. So the women's team will be at home for their next 2 games this upcoming week. At noon on Saturday the 13th, they will host Oral Roberts before hosting the Coyotes of South Dakota at 7 p.m. on the 18th. And that is all we have for you guys on Tommy Town, as there is no new news on the football team. So, excuse me, kind of misspoke, kind of didn't. Before we move on, we're done with, our Tommy Town. Before we get into our next professional sports segment, do want to give out 2 huge shout outs to the FCS and the FBS national champions that were crowned this last weekend. So for the champion that maybe not as many know about in the FCS division, the South Dakota State Jackrabbits took care of the Montana Grizzlies 23-3 to bring home the 2023 title. It looks like it was a pretty close game in the first half. South Dakota State jumped out to a 7-0 lead in the first quarter, and only led 7-3 at halftime, and then took a 16-point third quarter to take the lead 23-3. And with that, stingy defense kind of held Montana at bay. So a huge congratulations to them. And then for the one that I'm sure a little bit more people do know about, the Michigan Wolverines, it's kind of bittersweet. Talking with some friends and some family members just about it being a Big Ten team. On one hand, it's awesome that they won, because you take a look at teams that were kind of maybe middle of the pack, like Illinois, us, and stuff like that, and it maybe gives us a little bit more of leeway, I guess, if you will, to say, hey, the Big Ten, was tough this year. They had, teams that played Michigan, maybe could have gotten an extra win had they not played them, and yada yada, all that kind of stuff. But at the same time, as a Minnesota fan, it does sting a little bit. I think I speak for a lot of Minnesota fans, most, if not all, when I say seeing Michigan, Chicago, and Wisconsin teams winning, never fun and never ideal. But needless to say, a huge congratulations to them. And yeah, up until the fourth quarter, this was essentially, a really, really close game. I mean, you take the fourth quarter away, the Michigan Wolverines shut out the Huskies and got 14 points up themselves. So you take that away, and this is essentially a 13-20 game that was close throughout. After the first quarter, Michigan was up 14-3, and then even at halftime, they were only up 17-10. And then after the going into, like I said, the fourth quarter was 13-20. So a good close game, throughout. Congratulations to both teams for obviously making the game, but a special congratulations to the Michigan Wolverines as they were able to get the job done. So with that, we got wild card, super wild card weekend coming up. Folks, but before we do get into that, we do have a little bit to talk on as far as the Wild and Timberwolves are concerned. So, actually had a question from Trevor, and Trevor wanted to know, Jack, what do you think is the biggest question surrounding this Wild team right now? And Trevor, that's a great question. It does suck not having your best player on the team. We're 1-5-0. Excuse me, without him, so that definitely stings and sucks. But to answer your questions, I think the biggest question is, what can we do at full strength? So we're very, very close to having Kirill Kaprizov, Jonas Brodin, Filip Gustavsson back from injury. As for Spurgeon, he's probably still going to be out for a little bit longer. But I mean, when you have such big name of guys like that out, I mean, just those four guys, Kirill, through our first 40 games, he's missed six games now. Six games now. Jonas Brodin, 34 games. Jonas Brodin has only been in 25 games, and Gustavsson has been missing some time too, making Fleury play kind of the predominantly one goalie to, a two, and then Spurgeon. I mean, again, we're 40 games in. Has only played 16 games, so it's definitely been a difficult in a season injury wise for us. But I think having a healthy-ish roster at last, I think, is music to our ears. It's a potential signal to, I believe, Central Division foes. That the battle-tested Wild are going to be ready to make a move up these standings, for sure. But I mean, not just, it's not just those four guys. I mean, through this game, I'm looking at the numbers right now. Matt Boldy missed six games. That's tough. Zuccarello's missed eight. Goudreau has missed, nine games, and then. Yeah, when you have some of these guys that have been out for a while, I mean, looking at, it here, only going into tomorrow night's game against the Philadelphia Flyers, Eriksson Ek, Rossi, Johansson, Faber, Maroon, Middleton, Dewar, and Duhame. I mean, it's a decent amount of guys. Eight guys. Only eight guys on the roster have not missed a game. So, again, it kind of stinks to be doing as poorly as we are without our top guy, because I think I speak for a lot of people when I say you look at this roster and there's talent up and down this roster. But yeah, I think ultimately at the end of the day, having those guys back should help. They just bring, relief into the locker room and all that kind of fun stuff. And yeah, hopefully, as Kirill Brodin Gustavson and hopefully Spurgeon sooner rather than later. We'll breathe some relief into the locker room and can kind of hit the ball running. So yeah, like I said, they got Philadelphia tomorrow night coming to town. Then Saturday, they got the Arizona Coyotes coming to town at 7. Monday, they will play host to the Islanders at 4. And then the night of the next podcast, we'll be in Tampa Bay for the start of a 3-game road trip, taking on the Lightning at 6 p.m. So that is what we have for the Wild. Not a ton to report on for the Minnesota Timberwolves. They're, continuing to do their own thing. Didn't get any questions about the Timberwolves today. Totally fine. But have seen, on Timberwolves Twitter, a lot of, hey, should the Timberwolves be doing anything come the trade deadline and all this kind of stuff. And, I hear some of these people, hey, maybe we should get, a little bit more scoring, a little bit more defense. I say don't fix what's not broken. This team is playing really well. They've been very healthy this season. So if this team can honestly continue to if this team can continue to stay healthy and excuse me, if they can continue to stay healthy and keep playing the way they're playing, close out close games, and again, not let themselves get into losing habits all that much. I mean, still, since the beginning of since January started, they're what, 1, 2, 3, they're 3-4, including back-to-back losses for the first time all season. So, tomorrow night they're gonna have, or so, sorry, no, 2-4. So, again, less than ideal. But they have a nice stretch of games coming up, and if they, like I said, if they can continue to be playing this brand of basketball that they've been playing, I mean, that'll be awesome. They're on track. I mean, 20, excuse me, 26-11. I mean, this team is on pace for, 50 plus wins. This season, flirting with 60, gonna be tough, gonna be very tough to do that. That means, for 9 losses, for the rest of January, February, March, and then half of April. But hey, crazier things have happened, and we're just gonna have to wait and see. But yeah, for those that didn't ask a question but that may be wondering, I think ride with what you got. Obviously, there's a little bit of time here before the trade deadline does come up. But at the same time, like I said, I think the big thing with this team, don't fix what's broken. So yeah, keep rocking with the team. They got the Portland Trail Blazers coming to town Friday night. Then Sunday they got the Clippers coming to town, which should be a fun game at 6. And then they will have back-to-back games. They will go to Detroit at 6 p.m. on Wednesday the 17th before hosting the Memphis Grizzlies at home on the 18th at 9 p.m. So that's really all we have for the Timberwolves. And now on to our Vikings wildcard weekend. I have to say, despite the tough game and tough loss to the Lions, even with everything else that panned out, even if we would have won that game, still wouldn't have made the playoffs with just with what everything came out to be. But it still stinks. But at the end of the day, I, especially with how many injuries, just like the Wild are right now, this team was just injury plagued. If we had Kirk Cousins the entire season, I don't think our offense would have been as stagnant as it was the last half of the season. And our defense probably would have been playing a lot better, simply from the standpoint of our offense would probably be able to sustain longer drives, giving them time to, rest up on the sidelines before going in and not having to play. as much as the game as they ended up having to do, because we had Nick Mullins, Josh Dobbs, and Jaren Hall at the helm. But yeah, we got a lot of stuff to go over with you guys, going over predictions and stuff like we've talked about before. This is very much a podcast that we don't just make predictions and then forget about them. No, we hold ourselves accountable over here. So we're going to go over all that kind of fun stuff, but and predictions for Wildcard Weekend. But before we get into all of that fun stuff, we're going to answer one question that we did get. Tanner wants to know, Jack, is it true that the Vikings already know their opponents next year? Yes, they do. However, dates, times, and all that fun stuff will be coming out this summer. But yes, the Vikings know who they will be playing at home and who they will be playing away already. So just like every year, we got the Lions, Bears, and Packers both at home and away. But this upcoming season, we will be playing the AFC South. The AFC South and the NFC East. So with that, the NFC East, we will be hosting Kyler Murray and the Cardinals and the 49ers, while we will be going to the LA Rams and to the Seattle Seahawks. As for the AFC South, we will be hosting CJ Stroud and the Texans, as well as the Indiana Colts. And then we will go to the Jacksonville Jaguars and the Tennessee Titans. And then, by virtue of where we fell in the standings, we will host the Falcons and the Jets and go to the Giants. So that's what I got for you, Tanner. And truthfully, I couldn't help but think about this looking at this. There's not, outside of, the Lions game, and maybe the Packers, depending on what they do this offseason. There's not a ton of these games that freak me out at glance right now. Like, obviously, assuming we're gonna get Kirk coming back and all that kind of stuff. Like, we're not going into a ton of hostile environments. The Giants, not a great, are coming off a kind of a crappy year. Titans are coming off a crappy year. Jaguars, I thought, were gonna be a lot better this year, kind of coming off of a so-so year. Seahawks were kind of pretty good. But really, other than the Lions game and maybe the Packers game, just because of how this year went, I really only look at the Jaguars as potential, probable loss. Home's gonna be a little bit different because we got the 49ers coming back to town again. The Texans, are a young up-and-coming team, and then if Aaron Rodgers comes back fully healthy, the Jets aren't going to be an easy team to beat. But, again, very early on, the season's not completely over, as we're still working up to the Super Bowl. But yeah, that is, that's what I got for you here, Tanner. So that's what we will answer here for you. And then as well as that, for any of those excuse me that maybe didn't notice this, the Vikings are one of four teams, it was announced, excuse me, just this morning. Just this morning, the NFL designated four teams that are going to give up a home game in 2024 to host a game in Europe. And yeah, that's the reason I brought it up. The Minnesota Vikings are one of four teams. The Chicago Bears will also be hosting a game in London with us, as well as the Jaguars, and the Panthers will host a game in Munich. So, yeah, with that, I would say, I don't think they would have us playing a division game abroad. I don't think it would be the Bears, Packers, or Lions. And truthfully, I think it might be really fun if they want to do NFC. I would love to play, the 49ers or the Jets at a neutral location, because those are two teams that I think are going to be very talented next year. And I think being able to play them, in a neutral location, might be fun. I would probably rather see them play an AFC team. So if that's the route they go, hopefully it's the Texans over the Colts. But yeah. So with that, we will just jump right into it. So I'm not gonna lie to you guys. Our preseason predictions for the Vikings did not go well. The first one was on the defensive ball. I said the Vikings were going to finish in the top five with the most sacks at the end of the season. That was not the case. We finished with 43 sacks on the year. Not too bad, but not good enough for top five. Baltimore led the league with 60. Kansas City was second with 57. Miami had 56. Buffalo had 54. And rounding out the top five was Indianapolis with 51. So, really, they were only eight sacks away from being eight sacks away from tying in the top five, but just didn't have enough gas. My second bold prediction was at the end of the season, Ty Chandler was going to lead the Vikings in rushing. That also did not happen. Alexander Mattison ended up rushing for 700 yards on the dot. While Ty Chandler was right behind him at number two, he finished with 461 yards. However, Ty did end up rushing for three touchdowns, whereas Mattison got zero. And my last one, we went a whopping 0 for 3 this year. As I said, KJ was going to have more catches than Jordan Addison, and that could not have been farther from the truth. Addison ended up having 70 receptions on the season, which was only second on the team. Only TJ Hawkinson had more with 95. My man KJ only ended up having 48 catches, so kind of took a big swing and missed on all three fronts as far as that's concerned. And then I think I talked about it last week on the podcast a little bit. Excuse me, but I don't remember going over my predictions on standings and everything like that. And truthfully, I didn't do all that bad as far as who I thought was going to make the playoffs. There were a couple of different things. So I had 1-7. I had Dallas making it. I had San Fran, Minnesota, Tampa Bay, and then Philadelphia, LA Rams, Detroit. So I didn't do terrible. Obviously, Minnesota was the only team that I said was going to get in that didn't. And who were they replaced with? I don't know why I can't think right now. Yeah, I don't know why I can't think right now, but they're the only team that I said was going to. Oh, the Packers. We're the only team that I said was going to make it. We essentially flipped and everything like that. The AFC was a little bit. excuse me. The AFC was a little bit different. So, obviously, I think I don't think I don't think I was the only one. I had the Jets winning the AFC East. The AFC East, and with that, I had Miami as the fifth seed and Buffalo as the seventh seed. The AFC North was a lot shaken up. I mean, really, the only thing that I got right was the AFC West. So just like I did with NFC, AFC 1-7, I had the Jets, Cincinnati, Cincinnati, Kansas City, and then at the four, Jacksonville. I really kind of thought Houston would be tied with Buffalo for that last spot, and Buffalo would get in with the tiebreak, and then Miami in the fifth seed, Baltimore with the seventh and or sixth, and then Buffalo with the seventh. So again, I didn't do terrible. I had Baltimore, Buffalo, Kansas City, Miami. So I had four of the seven. But yeah, it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting nonetheless. But yeah, really kind of really excited to see things going here. Get things going here. So with that, we will wrap up here for the night with the final thing we have for you guys, which is our picks for wild card weekend. My brother so eagerly and nicely reminded me that I've had such good picks the last 2 years, so I shouldn't screw this up this year. So thank you very much for that, Dan. The first game of the week, the Cleveland Browns are 2-point favorites over the host Houston Texans. And I gotta say, I like Houston to upset Cleveland. Look, CJ Stroud was sidelined when Joe Flacco and Amari Cooper torched the Texans in Houston on Christmas Eve, but that will not happen again this week. Sure, the Texans still have the youth while the Browns have the experience. But Houston, I think, will take its lessons learned from their last matchup to win a big one at home this Saturday. I got Houston winning 28-24. Can't and then game number two, Chiefs and Dolphins. Kansas City's 5-point favorites over Miami, and I like Miami winning this game. And truthfully, I think this is going to be a really popular upset because the Chiefs might be lured into a shootout with the Dolphins, which could be bad news for them. Kansas City, I know, beat Miami 21-14 in Germany in Week 9, and the Dolphins were 4-4 on the road this year. Excuse me. But Patrick Mahomes is. And I know Patrick Mahomes is 9-2 at home in the postseason as well, but this offense has just not clicked the same this season as I kind of predicted a little bit. I expect Mike McDaniel to be aggressive early on, and if Andy Reid continues to challenge that to patience, I think Tua gets his first playoff career victory and knocks out the defending Super Bowl champions. I got the Dolphins winning this one, 24-21. Yes, you heard me correctly. And then game one on Sunday, Bills and Steelers. I got Buffalo winning, but not covering the spread. This is the fourth playoff meeting between these two teams. And for me, Buffalo won its last five games. But four of those victories were one-score games. The Bills are 1-5 against the spread when favored by more than 7 points. But and especially with TJ Watt's knee might being out and the Pittsburgh just unsettled at the quarterback situation with Rudolph or Pickett, I think the Steelers were 5-0 straight up as underdogs this last week. Of 3 points or more on the season. So with that, I think Pittsburgh does enough to hang around in this game and make it competitive. But I think ultimately Buffalo is just too talented to lose to Pittsburgh in this one. So I got the Bills winning 23-17. The middle game on Sunday, Dallas and Green Bay. It's simple. I like Dallas. I personally don't think no coach has more pressure on them than Mike McCarthy this week. who is 1-2 in the postseason with Dallas and with his former team visiting Dallas. I think he's ready to prove he should be in Dallas. Jordan Love has enjoyed, you know, an amazing first season as a starter, but the Packers are 4-5 on the road this season. And I think Dak Prescott should have more success with CeeDee Lamb. I think Green Bay's defense has improved against the run, yes, but there are too many holes in that secondary. So I think Dallas's pass rush will be the difference maker. But I think it's also worth noting the Cowboys are 8-0 straight up at home this season as well. I got the Cowboys winning this game and covering the spread 31-21. And then Sunday's last game, we got Jared Goff versus Matthew Stafford. And guys, Detroit is a 3-point favorite over them. This is my third upset. I think the Lions have enjoyed a terrific season. This is not me trying to get back at the Lions. This is me trying to predict truly what I think is going to happen. I think the Rams are just a very bad matchup for them here. Assuming LA's kicking issues don't cost the team the game, I expect the Rams receivers to mostly have their way with Detroit's stressed out secondary. And I think the Lions are going to greatly miss Sam Laporta, which it's looking like he's not going to be able to play, or if he does, he's going to be seriously compromised. And I think LA pulls off the upset at Ford Field. I got them winning 24-20. And with that, Monday night wild card matchup. Philadelphia Eagles, despite coming on the road, are 3-point favorites over the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And you heard it here first. I got the two teams from the Super Bowl last year losing wild card weekend. Look, Tampa Bay has won 5 of their last 6, and the Eagles have lost 5 of their last 6. The playoffs are a different animal, but those trends matter. One extra day of preparation isn't going to make that much of a difference for Hurts' injured finger. You add A.J. Brown, who's questionable. A.J. Brown. Why can't I think of their other receiver right now? Devontae Smith is banged up. Reed Blankenship is banged up. Sidney Brown's going to be out. And I think their pass defense is going to be suspect. And I got the Bucs beating the Eagles and advancing 24-20. So, yeah, those are my picks. Those are my picks this week for you guys. I got the Texans, the Dolphins, the Bills, the Cowboys, the Rams, and the Buccaneers all winning in Wild Card Weekend and advancing to live one more week. So, with that, I will leave you guys with, remember, this podcast about you guys, the listeners. If you have a topic you want me to address or a question you want me to answer, please reach out on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, or by emailing us. Twitter, TikTok, and Instagram handles are at MiniWeekend, and email is miniweekend@gmail.com. That's MINNYWEEKEND @gmail.com. And be sure to let us know if you'd like to stay anonymous with your questions as well. Also, find us and give us a follow on Instagram and Twitter, where there are giveaways and you can stay up to date on all things Mini Weekend. And lastly, make sure you hit that subscribe button to get notified of the new episode as soon as it comes out. Till next time, Mini.